Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Chasing Freedom Podcast with Noah and Jeff.
In this show, we're going to dive deep into flips, wholesales, holding rentals, and creatively structuring deals.
So that we can show you how you can achieve that lifestyle of freedom that you desire. Hey guys, Jeff here. Welcome back to the Chasing Freedom Show. Normally with Noah and Jeff, but today is a little bit different. Noah's on a plane back from BPCon in New Orleans, so it's just going to be me and my good buddy Dustin Young. Dustin Young is an awesome investor with L2LRE LLC, which stands for Lemons to Lemonade, which is exactly what we do here in the real estate game. So today we're going to pick his brain on what he's got going, why he got started, and Dustin is killing it. He's in Racine County in Wisconsin, and he's absolutely doing some awesome stuff, so I'm excited to chat about that and just pick his brain. Dustin, thanks so much for being on the show today, man.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, man. We're looking forward to it. So like a lot of our past shows, we got the opportunity to meet Dustin in Maui at the Maui Masterclass. Dustin was one of the cooler people there. Don't tell all the other people that, but he has one of the most like genuine stories. And so I'm excited to kind of dig into that and just get down the road of why you got started in real estate. So why don't you tell the listeners what you were doing before you started doing real estate, and then what made you take that leap into doing real estate full time?
Right. So I've always, had the entrepreneurial bug, so to speak. My dad, despite being a salesman all his life, working for other people, kind of instilled that in me. And I got an engineering degree. I hated it. I was a really poor student. So if Daniel Mech ever finds me, I got a 2.4 GPA.
There you go.
Yeah. But I'll still be driving my exotic car someday. So couldn't find an engineering job. It was back in like 2001 when, you know, planes hit the towers and the market collapsed. Ended up finding myself in manual labor and I loved it. And that led me from a mover to a delivery guy, which led me to FedEx Ground, which operates as independent contractors.
Okay.
So in 2004, I started with one employee, one truck, one route. And by 2014, I had 30 trucks in 3 states operating out of 2 terminals. And then February 18th of 2014, one of those trucks ran me over.
the most casual way to drop that ever.
Right. That's a whole nother episode unto itself. Nevertheless, I was working on it. I was underneath. It rolled over me. Flight for life. Excuse me. So 27 days in the hospital over 3 different stays, 4 months total recovery. Wow. But in the middle of my recovery, FedEx called and said, yo, this is going downhill without you being here, so you got to go.
Wow.
But because I owned it and we were contractors, and contract gives you 30 days to do what you can before they cut you off.
Okay.
I made 4 phone calls and sold it all.
Oh, nice.
So I was sitting on $1 million, decided my youngest was 10 months old when it happened. So I said, you know what? I'm done. I've been working like a slave for 80 hours a week for the last decade.
Yeah.
So I took 4 years off until my youngest went back to school all day. And then I said, all right, time to scratch that itch.
Yeah.
I circled through a couple of things without pulling the trigger, but pulled the trigger on real estate and I ain't going back.
Awesome, man. That's a powerful story. I actually didn't know about the 4-year gap in between. That's actually really cool. So you just said, hey, I've been working like crazy. Now I got this little kid at home. Let me just focus on being a dad and hanging out with the family.
Yeah. So I had a life insurance policy. I don't know. I certainly recommend it to all you entrepreneurs out there. Yeah. It's called the disability overhead expense. So if I go down, then whatever money I was bringing in that I can no longer bring in, the insurance policy covers it.
Okay.
So it helped make payroll and truck payments and that sort of thing. But in the process of saying, hey, give me a check, they said, great, what do you do? And I said, well, I do everything. And they're like, yeah, that's great. What do you actually do? Like, I need to know, like, where are you from what time to what time? Mm. And I was like, oh, all right. So by the time I was like, okay, I'm in the terminal getting everybody off on the road, and then I go run a route, and then I'm answering calls until the last truck is in. I'm like, man, I'm working 14 hours a day.
Yeah. You were just in that grind and didn't notice, right? Until somebody said, hey, take a look at what you're doing.
Yeah. Until, you know, I got smacked upside the head with the undercarriage of a FedEx truck.
Yeah, that's a wake-up call, man.
Yeah, you know, so what I thought, you know, I guess it was like the original, like, Instagram, like, flex, right? I mean, I wasn't on social media back then, but it's like I thought I was living the high life, running my own business, doing my own thing, and until I realized it was just a big ball and chain.
Yeah. Yeah, but, I think that's a key point, man. So many people, even in real estate, like, they just create a busy job for themselves. And, like, that's what I loved about the masterclass and, like, all the people who were there, because everyone that was there, a couple of those guys had kind of got themselves out of that kind of rat wheel, right? And then the rest of us are like, hey, how do you do that? So we're all trying to learn, like, hey, how to implement systems, processes. And so, because this can very quick, I talk about this all the time, but I think real estate can very quickly just become another ball and chain if you don't set it up right. So I think we'll kind of dive into that later, what you're doing to set things up so that it doesn't just become another rat wheel for you, or ball and chain, we should say. But why don't you walk us through, so you decided, okay, after 4 years, I'm going to jump into real estate. Why real estate? Did you have any experience in real estate or a family member? What got you kind of going down that path?
You know, like I said, my dad kind of was an inspiration. He had... It's kind of the move on real estate investor, right? Moved out of the little bungalow into the house, kept it. Did some house packing back in the, date myself here, the mid-80s.
Before they called it house hacking.
Right. You know, my uncle had a couple rental properties, but it was never really like front of mind and like preached and taught about. So really, I came back to when we bought our first property here in Milwaukee. I felt like I knew more than my real estate agent, and I loved it, right? Just like scrolling through Realtor, Zillow didn't exist back then, you know? So it's like, I knew more about the properties in my area than she did, because she's servicing a bunch of people all over. I don't even know how I found Bigger Pockets, you know, what I searched for, or what led me there. But man, once I did, it was just like that deep dive rabbit hole.
Yeah.
I actually went back and was helping out a friend at FedEx. And so because I was on a truck all day and I was actually delivering at a mall, which is super easy, I just had an earbud in all day. I think I listened through a good 300 of the podcasts, you know? And so I read a dozen different books and I was like, I'm ready to go.
Awesome.
You know, like, that Brandon says it all the time. You got to get that first deal, get started.
Yep.
And, so my first deal was a $20,000 single family home in a Class D neighborhood. And I was just kind of like, 20 grand, it's not going to kill me. So like, whatever, I can burn it down or, you know, give it to the tenant if this doesn't work.
Yeah.
It was rented at $650 a month. So I'm like, hey, that's like 3.5% rule.
That's wild.
So, and that was my trial by fire. The first week I owned it. She called the cops 3 times.
Wow.
So on the seller, oddly enough, he apparently didn't know how real estate went down because he was coming back to like try and get stuff and like trying to collect security deposit. And one night he came back in the middle of the night and like literally shot off her gas meter.
No way.
Yeah. So after that, he left us alone. She was not the greatest tenant. But right now we've rehabbed it and it's just got approved Section 8 for $1,300.
That's crazy. So, okay. So you picked that up for $20K. What'd you go and spend on the rehab?
Not much. It's pretty much lipstick. I mean, new kitchen cabinets and bathroom, painted everything, put some carpet upstairs. So maybe 10 grand.
Okay. Thanks. So you're in $30K and then whatever holding and all that. Are you on a traditional mortgage on that one?
That one's paid off.
Okay. You just bought it free and clear?
Yeah.
Nice.
At one point I did refinance, but then with the apartment building where I'm at now, get into refinance the apartment building and paid off all the other singles.
Oh, nice. Okay, cool. So that one, I mean, that's a killer deal. You're in at about $30K and you get $1,300 a month in Section 8 tenants. Let's talk about, do you do a lot of Section 8 stuff or was that kind of a one-off?
I got a couple people on vouchers, some people through like county programs and stuff.
But
this is, I think, my first official Section 8.
Okay. Cause on the West Coast, like, And I'm Boise, Idaho, not really West Coast anymore, but I started there. Boise likes to think they're still West Coast. I guess we're still Pacific Northwest technically. But right. Section 8 is like really frowned upon here. Like you say, if I tell somebody in my local market, like, hey, I have a Section 8 tenant, because we have Section 8 tenants in Indiana, and they're like, you trust Section 8? I'm like, yeah, why would I not? The government is paying their rent. And the government also has standards how that house has to look for a Section 8 tenant to be placed. So now, right. like, there's some things that I'm almost forced to do on the front end. Or, like, in those markets, what I find is a lot of the sellers who are selling me their properties have already done some of those things to get it to where a Section 8 tenant can live in there. So I already go, okay, like, that's almost like a double inspection for me, right? Like, I do my normal inspection, but then if it can qualify for Section 8, well, then that means somebody from Section 8 has looked at this and said that this is a unit that meets their qualifications. So I noticed, like, we do Indiana. You're in Milwaukee. So is Section 8 like a common thing in Milwaukee or in Racine County?
Yeah, there is a huge waiting list, and I'm not sure why more people don't create properties. I don't know if that's the program just doesn't have enough money to pay for it or whatnot. Mm-hmm. But again, if you're a decent human being and you want to provide a quality place to live, yeah. the inspection is not that intense.
Yeah.
You know, a couple of things you overlooked, like there was a conduit going from a switch up to a light fixture. Well, it wasn't strapped to the wall.
Yeah.
So, I mean, right, a double inspection, because they definitely look more nitty gritty than you. You're like, yeah, it works. It's great.
Yeah.
Like, no, you don't want a kid hanging on that.
Yeah.
So $1,300 a month, my tenant pays $111 of that.
Okay. Wow. That's incredible. Those are great numbers. That's wild cash flow. All right. So you got that deal. That was a pretty good deal. How did it kind of snowball into where you're at? Because now you're doing multifamily stuff, right?
Right. So I went gangbusters. So I bought that one. And so in the same, like the first month, I bought that one off MLS.
Okay.
I bought a duplex off a wholesaler. And then I bought another single family off MLS.
Wow.
So the duplex was like half rehabbed, had been in a family for like 60 years.
Wow.
One of the nephews was still upstairs and paying like stupid cheap rent. And then the other single family was like completely rehab. So it was like turnkey ready.
Okay.
And then, kept going. I bought the apartment building I'm in 2 years ago. So things slowed down there. This is kind of where my FedEx habits are creeping back in.
Yeah.
It's intentional and temporary. I wanted to use this project to learn all of the trades instead of getting, paying for all the quotes and stuff. I wanted to know, okay, once I'm done with this and I springboard into the next thing, and this will, get me set on the finances, and then I can pay people to do this. I want to know what I'm really getting into.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. No, I think that's a good point. We actually talked about that on an episode that we recorded last week, was like, there's this tendency in real estate for people to just want to make that jump, right? Like, oh, I'm getting started. I listen to Bigger Pockets. Boom. Now I am the architect. I'm the entrepreneur running a 50-unit apartment flip, and I don't need to know anything. Like, no, it doesn't really work that way. So we talked about, there's a couple methods you can use, right? Like, you can do a partnership with somebody who knows what they're doing, and then you could be like the high-level operator. Or you could... maybe you could go and try and figure it all out. But for me, like, I got started doing manual labor, and that's how I learned how to do construction. And then once I knew construction on single family residences, flipping was easy because I had that background. And not everybody knows that. Like, Noah can't freaking do paint floors or anything. Like the guy's got the cleanest hands I've ever seen in real estate, but he partnered with a guy like me. So I think that's actually, it's smart to learn. So walk us through. So this is it 25 unit apartment building?
Yeah. So when I bought it, the people that were selling it were trying to do a mental health, like, crisis rehab facility.
Yeah.
And just too much red tape, city, state, county, local, like everything. So they were just like, I'm done.
Yeah.
They're operating, they don't operate apartments, residential. They do the health because they want the insurance money. So when I bought it, it was 16 units.
Okay.
I'll say that because some of them were like, it was almost like a hostel. There was like three rooms sharing a bathroom and one common kitchen down the hall.
Awesome.
And a lot of office space, right? Nurse rooms, break rooms. I mean, I still got an old like metal security gate that was like the medical dispensary room.
Nice.
So we converted all the office space into apartments, you know, the common dining room into apartments. They had these really big lobbies. One was like the gym, you know, so we added a bedroom onto. Yeah, so we're right now 25 units. That's my waiting list up over at my corner.
Oh, there. Nice.
So I've never advertised, and we got a full house and a waiting list.
That's awesome. So you have 25 units completed, or is that the total unit count for the whole building?
There's a total unit count for the whole building. 25 are occupied. 3 units we haven't turned over.
Okay.
But they've been occupied by the same person since I bought it.
Okay, nice. So
happy with what they got.
Okay. So walk us through what did you pay for this property? And then what's your strategy? Cause it sounds like you're doing a value add, and then are you going to do a refi when you're all done?
I did.
Okay.
So I bought it for $380.
Okay.
And at the time the rent roll was $8,000. So I didn't have to do anything.
Yeah.
But $8,000 sounds good until you realize it was built as a facility. So there's only one electric meter. So
oh, wow.
I paid for everything. So, I mean, it still would have been fine, clear, you know, $1,000 or $2,000 a month. Mm-hmm. But that was not my goal. I'm not going to just leave a building half empty.
Yeah.
So in 2 years, I have doubled the rent roll. We've turned over 22 or created or turned over 22 of the 25 units. And I just did a cash out refi a couple months ago, and it got valued at 1.56.
Wow. 1.56. That's incredible. So let's go through that. So you paid 380 and you just cashed out. It got appraised at 1.56. So you probably cashed out somewhere around like 1.1 or something.
So I put 600 into it, right?
Okay.
With all the materials and obviously 2 years of time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I cashed out 990.
Okay. Nice.
It was a new bank relationship. They wanted to go kind of conservative, and I wasn't looking to shoot for the moon. I was pretty happy with, quadrupling my money, so to speak.
Yeah, that's crazy. Okay, so now you got this asset. You've pulled out all the capital that you put into it. What was your financing method when you set this up at the onset? Do you use hard money? Did you fund the whole thing, or what'd this look like?
I used the bank the first time. So, yeah, I put $85,000 down on 380. And then this time, obviously, I didn't have to put anything down because it was worth 1.56, and I was only pulling out $1 million.
Yeah. Yeah, how'd you fund the rehab, the 600K?
Bootstrapping.
Okay.
So that, you know, that's the part of my story that I don't wish for anyone to repeat, because obviously I got ran over by a truck to sell my old company.
Yeah.
So I used the proceeds from that.
Okay.
To fund my deal.
Nice. Okay. Man. Okay. So now you have your 600K back plus a little bit of change. You're in this new loan. What does it look like? What do the cash flow numbers look like today on that thing? So you got a 25 unit, your debt on it's just shy of $1 million. What are rents right at now?
Rent roll is like 16.2 or something like that. Wow. A month. Mortgage is 5,300. Utilities run about 2,300 for electric.
Okay.
Another 1,000 for taxes. Another, call it 1,000 for whatever miscellaneous.
Yeah.
You know, water and internet and, you know, snow plowing and whatnot. So
snow plowing, you don't hear that too often. Not over here, at least. All right. So it sounds like if I'm good at math, which I'm not that great at math in my head, but somewhere around like a net cash flow of like $4,500 a month.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Not too steady.
Yeah. That's freaking solid, dude. From a 25 unit, what does that put you at? That's more than $100, $200 a door. If I'm decent at math, yeah, something like that. Yeah. That's really good, man. And so on that, do you managing it yourself right now? Or you have an in-house management team? What's that look like?
Yes to both. So part of my transition from FedEx is one, the terminal that we were operating in off out of state. That guy has worked for me in the FedEx world for about 13 years.
Wow.
So I said, hey, you want to come back and yeah, real estate? So yeah, he's been here working with me for the last 3 years since I've been doing real estate. So he lives in the building.
Okay.
So he's handyman, manager, nighttime toilet plunger, knockouts.
Yeah. Nice.
Today we had an 800-pound water heater delivered that we had to take downstairs.
Wow. That's a dense. Cool, man. Well, so what's next? What do you got on the horizon? What are you looking? It sounds like this thing is stabilized, and it's more just now creating a team that can run it so you can kind of jump to the next thing.
You bet. Well, you see some blueprints over my corner.
Yeah.
My shoulder. So that is a warehouse to mixed use conversion.
Okay.
18,000 square feet. That's going to be 8 apartments and 2 storefronts.
Wow. How many square feet was it?
18,000.
Okay. I thought I heard 800,000. I was like, Dustin, that's huge, bro. All right, 18,000.
Really big cool. apartments. So that one I've got a partner on and a private money lender for okay. that one. I've got another commercial complex that's 3 buildings that I've got a partner and a private money lender. We've got one of the 3 units occupied. Second one, we're in talks right now. And I put an offer in on Friday on a medical triplex, which their deadline is today. So hopefully I hear back from that one.
Nice.
Yeah. So I was inspired by Maui, by AJ Osborne, by the CRE circle. I'm going commercial.
Yeah. Nice.
I love people from networking and talking and selling and buying, but I don't like tenants.
I don't think I've ever met an owner of multifamily who's like, I love tenants. Right. Walk us through. So aside from like not liking tenants, what's the mindset shift to jump to commercial? What makes you want to go that way? Or what's the power of commercial?
So for me, it's a little bit of like, don't repeat history, right? So the last 2 years I've been here slaving away, doing all the manual labor. Now I've caught myself, so I'm not doing 80-hour weeks anymore.
Yeah.
But I want to more time freedom, you know, things I've learned along the way just in personal development. You know, I want to be able to travel with the wife, with the kids. We bought a camper during COVID, so I want to hit the road. And my ultimate goal is to take power of real estate. We belong to the International Churches of Christ. So our church here in Racine is 33 members. So for the first 7 of 10 years, we were just volunteer. I mean, the main preacher was a school teacher.
Wow.
Until 3 years ago, we actually hired a full-time staff. So I want to see if I can merge religion and real estate so that a small church can pay their bills and pay their minister off of real estate.
Yeah.
And all of the money that members give could actually be deployed back into the community.
Yeah, that's killer.
Whatever, you know, food pantries or just, you're late on your rent or, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
Some crisis comes up. That way, you know, they can really be a presence and an example in a community.
Yeah, I love that, man. I think that's so awesome. You don't often hear people say, hey, not only do I want to help like sponsor the church and figure out a way that they can get covered, but I also want to do that so that everything else that we're giving can go back into the community. And I think that's huge. One of the common threads that I love in real estate and like real estate entrepreneurs is there's a ton of real estate entrepreneurs who are believers. And I think that's one of the reasons that our industry is so unique in that we have like the why is the huge motivation behind a lot of the risks that we're willing to take on. And that why is never simple, at least not from the like, I've never met anybody who's like, what's your why? I just want to be rich. Like, no, I never hear that in real estate. It's always like, hey, I want time freedom to spend with my family, to spend with my friends. And then I want abundance so that I can create abundance for other people. And like, that's it's just so awesome to see that as a repeat theme throughout like the people we meet in real estate.
Yeah, so that was one of the things I got out of Maui, you know, just kind of setting that vision. And a big shout out to Bobby. We kind of have a similar vision. Like, I want to be able to retire my wife, so I'd like to replace her income. And then I want to go above and beyond that so that I can, you know, disperse that. So when I go to a town and preach real estate, I can be like, hey, here's a Kickstarter. Let's get going.
Yeah.
So my goal is 50K a month.
Yeah, I love it. Well, my goal was 30, and now I feel like it's small. That's awesome, man. All right, so let's talk about this medical triplex, because I don't know anything about medical. Is there something that makes the medical industry like very attractive, or just the fact that it's a commercial asset and medical seems to be an industry that doesn't go away?
So this particular one is a great location. It's right on a main drag in between 2 roads that go back to the main freeway. And it's a value add component, which obviously I'm kind of drawn to.
Yeah.
So only 2 of the units are occupied, which helps. It's a fairly new build, so like 2001. So still in pretty good shape. And I learned from Massey and another friend that a dentist office is like the most expensive build out you can do. Hmm. And a dentist office just moved in.
Oh, so, nice.
So they're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And I happen to have one of the moms on my kid's baseball team works for the allergy clinic. So I got a little inside info that they're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
They're only there 2 days a week now. She's like, but before COVID, we were planning to go to five.
Wow.
So I'm like, sweet.
Yeah.
So yeah. So obviously I get to like negotiate down because there's only two units filled.
Yeah.
And then I get to turn around and do the value add by filling the third and converting them from a gross lease to a triple net.
Okay. Nice. Let's talk value add. Let's go like super simplistic. What is a value add for anybody who's listening to this podcast and maybe doesn't know what a value add is?
Well, since I got a lemon on my shirt, let's talk lemonade.
Yeah.
So you go to Costco and you can buy a 24 pack of water and it's like a quarter a bottle, right?
Yep.
So that's one value to that water bottle. But you see a kid in the middle of the road on a hot day in a cooler, and now he's selling you a cold, same water bottle for a buck.
Yep.
So he added value to it by bringing it just one to you and it was cold. And then somebody can look at that dollar water bottle and go, that's super cheap. I'm going to put in this 10 cent packet of Kool-Aid and now I'm going to sell it for $3.
Yeah.
So you just simple ways to add value along the way that make it worth more money to the end user.
Man, that was like the coolest definition of value add I've ever heard. Like I feel like my 3-year-old kid could understand value add now. That's right, rad.
That's why we set up lemonade stands. We get them started.
Yeah. That's good, man. So it's essentially taking something that has an initial value and increasing that value by adding something to it. So let's walk through this medical triplex. You got to, what's your value add there? Just filling the vacant unit, or you got to remodel that vacant unit, or what does that look like?
Nope, it's already built out as like a urgent care facility.
Okay.
So that would be good for physical therapy or massage therapy, or we know somebody who's licensed to do Botox. So yeah, it should be pretty much turnkey, you know, maybe different paint colors and artwork and whatnot.
Yeah.
So right now with commercial and NOIs and cap rates and all that, which we'll gloss over for the most part, based on the rents, it's worth about $950-ish.
Yeah.
And then, but the building, because they're gross leases and not triple net, there's about $50,000 worth of expenses.
Okay.
So if I can shift that $50,000 onto my tenants, then I have no more money coming out of my pocket. They yep. handle everything. As well as if I fill the third space, then now I've added another, you know, $5,000 a month in rent roll too.
Yeah. Let's talk triple net. So triple net, you're just assigning essentially all building costs to the tenants, right?
Yes.
Cool. Just wanted to hit that real quick for, because when I got started, people were like, oh yeah, do commercial, do triple net. I'm like, bro, what is a triple net? And it's honestly like so simple. Like you're assigning any expense that you would have as the owner into the cost of the lease for that unit.
Yeah, I mean, the easiest way to think about it from a residential standpoint is if you rent a single family home, you still pay the gas and the electric.
Yeah.
You don't pay the property taxes directly, but it's built into the rent.
Yeah.
So you're taking care of all the expenses. You got to mow, you got to shovel,
yep.
or trim trees, or, you know, clean the gutters, that kind of thing.
So. Yeah. Yeah. We have an 11 unit right now that we're doing a burr on. And one of the ways we're increasing our, because it's valued at a cap rate, which is, we'll go over that some other day because it's a complicated formula and you got to explain it all. But essentially we decided like, hey, I was just looking at it and I was like, dude, the water, sewer, and garbage on this thing is really only about $25 a month. But there's 11 of them and I don't want to pay that. And per the leases before, they were paying that. So then we got the new tenants in place. We assigned the water, sewer, garbage to those guys and they were already paying all their own stuff. But just by doing that, we essentially created an extra $25 per unit in revenue a month, which times the 11 unit is like $275 or something, if I'm decent at max, which doesn't yeah. seem like much. But when you reduce that, it's no longer an expense against it, which then increases my value per the cap rate. So that's one of the cool things that is fun about multifamily and commercial real estate. You can increase your value by doing these really small things, right? like right. just assigning $25. That's why AJ Osborne talks about what self-storage is so awesome, because he can go and increase a unit rent by $10 and doesn't, no one's moving out over $10. Like, it's way right. more of a hassle to get your crap out and move out. But if you got 100, 200, 300 units in that storage complex, dude, that's a large amount of money that you just created and increased the value of that based on the cap rate by doing a $10 increase. That's what's fascinating about the commercial industry and the multifamily market.
Yeah, I had a storage unit for a project vehicle for that interim 4 years.
Yeah.
I'll say it that way. It's another podcast unto its own. But, so it was a big unit. It was 10, 15 by 50 or something like that.
Okay, yeah.
Started out at $492 a month.
Okay.
And over the course of 2 years, when I left, it was almost $600 a month. And
yeah.
So that jump was finally like, all right.
Yeah. You're like, I'm out. But aside from that, like before that, you're like, oh, it's 10, it's 15. Like, you're not going to move over it, right? But it allows that. And really the key is, because it increases the value, that if you're doing this value add or this BRRRR concept, that then by increasing the value by doing something super simple like that, now you can get a larger cash out refi, pull your money out, maybe make some tax-free money in between. Because that's what's right. cool about value add is like, I love your definition, because when people hear value add, they think it's like, oh, like a flip is value add. Yeah, it's one form of a value add, but it's not the only form. Occupying empty units is another form of value add. Noticing that the property was undermanaged with the previous landlord and that they were paying all the utilities, and now you're putting that on the tenants. That's a value add. That's actually a huge value add that I think people miss, because it doesn't cost you any money to do it, but it creates so much value in doing it if you have a high enough unit count. So I love you.
So on this medical triplex, the owner lives in Phoenix.
Okay.
Right? He's kind of doing one off for snow and garbage and whatnot, but I'm here. I've got 30 units, so I can already use my network of people.
Yeah.
Based on a 7 cap, just filling that vacant unit adds about $500,000 worth of value.
That's crazy. That's wild. And you said that one, you wrote an offer at 950 on it?
925.
Okay. That's killer, man. That's cool.
Asking 1.1.
Okay. Nice. All right. And then you find out on that today. That'll be exciting to touch base and see if you get that one. That could be a cool one. Yeah. The medical is just, it's so fascinating to me. But I mean, it's just funny because like 4 years ago, I wouldn't have even gone to an urgent care, because I'm like, I don't got the money to pay for an urgent care. Like, so now to think about like, oh, it's legit. Like, I could go buy a medical complex. Like, that's just, it's so wild. And to me, like, that never seemed like, oh, that's real estate. But it is, because they're just leasing the space. So that's awesome. I've really enjoyed this episode, because it's been so different than a lot of the other stuff we've talked about, right? It's normally like...
what I'm here for.
Yeah, I love it, man. We get a lot of single family guys in here, or a small multi, which honestly, like sub 75 is super, I guess I shouldn't say it, but in my mind, sub 75 is super similar to like single families. It's just increased volume, but maybe I'll get some backlash on that. But Dustin,
you guys got some heavy hitters out there in Boise, so I'm impressed.
Yeah, we got some big, I mean, really just AJ Osborne. He's our biggest Boise hitter. But let's go through, so you started Bigger Pockets is what kind of inspired you, or maybe not inspired you, but that's how you learned a ton of your info to get started in real estate, right?
For sure.
Let's just talk about why that was so important for you. So normally what we do in wrapping up, we talk about best books you've read, best podcasts, and we'll get there. But why was Bigger Pockets so pivotal to you, and why would you recommend that to somebody else? Because what I've been noticing right now is we've been gaining our social media following, and like, we've been like trying to do more like engaging stuff on our social media. Like, hey, ask me any question about real estate. And I get a ton of people who hit me up and like ask me all these super simple questions that I'm happy to answer. But a lot of them I'm like I don't have an hour to explain to you what wholesaling is. So go listen to Bigger Pockets, or go listen to Max Maxwell on YouTube, or go listen to Wholesaling Inc. or these guys. And I don't know if they're doing it. So maybe for our listeners, maybe if I can get them to just listen to the show, why was Bigger Pockets so big for you, and why would you tell people to go and listen to that?
Two things come to mind. I mean, one, kind of like Maui, right? It's it's smaller, and like, because there's so many different facets to real estate.
Yeah.
You can scroll through 512 episodes now and find even a headline that just sticks out to you.
Yeah.
You know, wholesaling or BRRRR, commercial or storage, yeah, right? I mean, somebody doing something that interests you. And because it's not a lecture, right? They're yeah, interviewing somebody. Like, this is real world. These aren't just hypothetical scenarios. Mm-hmm. This is their life, and this is how they make a living, and this is what they're doing. This is how they got there. So I think if you just listen long enough and get enough genres, you'll find something that sticks out to you.
Yeah.
Well, there's that. And I forget the other one now, but just because they're giving it away, right? It's not a guru kind of thing. They're not yeah, trying to, hey, I mean, sure, come buy my book, but it's whatever, $15-$20.
Yeah.
Right? It's not a $5,000 course or a $10,000 weekend or whatever. And kudos to Josh Dorkin. I mean, that's what he wanted. He wanted it to just be like a network of people. And I think a real estate is just, you got to have an abundance mindset.
Yeah.
I just found out about a guy. He's building a 350,000 square foot warehouse, like down the road from my house.
Wow.
And it's like, oh, you look him up. And it's like, this dude owns a manufacturing company and other things. And I've never heard of him.
Yeah.
He doesn't go to any of the local meetups. I don't, you know, don't see his name on the news.
Yeah.
There's so many people like that in real estate that there's enough for everyone.
Yeah.
You just got to pick something and get started.
Yeah. I like what you just said right there, man. There is enough for everyone. Like, one of the things we always get hit with, because I'm just big into like giving away information. Like, that's why I like doing this podcast. Like, I just, one, I enjoy talking to people about real estate, hearing their stories. Two, like, right, I just love inspiring people. Like, I hope that someday people can look back and be like, man, Jeff helped me get started in real estate. Jeff helped me take that next step. Like, abundance is how I operate. And it's so funny, I get questioned on it so much. Like, people are like, are you doing this all to set up some education program in the future? I'm like, no, dude. Like, I'll just try to share because somebody was odd. Like, because I learned off of BiggerPockets too. I learned off of BiggerPockets, and I learned from mentors in my local market who are willing to take me under their wing and teach me stuff. And they didn't charge me for it. In fact, they brought me on the deals and helped me make money. So I'm like, why would I do anything different? So that, I think that's one of the reasons I was attracted to BiggerPockets too, is because they're not selling you anything aside, like you said, aside from a book that honestly has an immense amount of value. Like, you pay $15 for a book that can change your life. I'll do that all day long, but they're not trying to sell me on a $5,000 course or a $10,000 weekend, like you said. So that's one of the things that attracted me to BiggerPockets too. Well, cool, man. Hey, I appreciate you coming on. In closing, aside from BiggerPockets, what other podcasts do you listen to or would you recommend? Or if you're not really a big podcast guy out of them, what books have you read that really kind of changed your business and changed your life?
I listen to a lot of podcasts, not all of them real estate.
Yeah.
I mean, Joe Rogan and Jocko Willink and yeah, Tim Ferriss, some of those bigger like mindset kind of things. Books. So I buy my siblings, I buy them three books. I buy them The Richest Man of Babylon, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and Set for Life. And I would throw in a new one that I just got. It's called The Honeybee.
Okay.
From Jake and Gino. I don't know if you know those guys.
No.
So kind of similar vein to Rich Dad, Poor Dad and Richest Man in Babylon. Pretty easy read, but follows the story of a beekeeper. So just super cool, super personal. It is real estate related.
Nice.
But just it helps with the mindset and some of those basic like business principles.
Awesome. Awesome, man. I appreciate it. How can our listeners find more about Dustin or get in touch with you or kind of chat with you a little bit?
Most active on Instagram, DNAMKE.
Nice.
An old handle. I should probably switch over to business.
It took me the longest time, but I actually switched for a week. And because I'm just Jeff_Fossen. And I was like, Jeff_Fossen, REI guy, REI, real estate investor. And I was like, nah, it's all just too much. Like, I'm just Jeff_Fossen. It is what it is. Cool, man. We'll drop that in the show notes too. So anybody who wants to get a hold of Dustin, talk real estate, talk about his multifamily stuff he's got going on. If you're in Milwaukee or in Wisconsin, hit him up.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Awesome. I appreciate it, man. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
All right, guys. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Chasing Freedom Podcast with Noah and Jeff.
Please subscribe to our YouTube channel in the show notes below. And if you ever want to get a hold of us, feel free to do it via our Instagrams. You can also follow us for our funny content on TikTok.